Welcome to Guerrillapreneur, the Art of Waging Small Business Warfare podcast, teaching Davids how to defeat Goliaths. Now here's your host, Mark Anthony Peterson.
Welcome back to the podcast for entrepreneurs, startups, and business mavericks. If you're not a maverick, you don't have to go home, but you got to get up out of this podcast. In this podcast, we teach entrepreneurs how to defeat the corporate giant. Just like in the story of David and Goliath, David defeated a much taller and stronger Goliath, not by fighting the giant in hand-to-hand combat, but by using technology. A slingshot. The slingshot allowed the smaller David to attack from a distance that minimized the advantages that Goliath had over the smaller David. My name is Mark Anthony Peterson. I'm a serial entrepreneur, a futurist, and the managing executive at Serial Consulting, a leading small business strategy and technology consulting firm. I'm also the author of the book Guerrillapreneur, Small Business Strategy for Davids Wanting to Defeat Goliaths, which is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and iTunes. This podcast is brought to you by Serial Consulting. An idea can launch a business, and a strategy can take it global. In today's episode, we're going to talk to the co-founder of Open Spot Parking, Baker Al-Nakib. All of us have been frustrated trying to find an open parking spot. When Baker launched Open Spot Parking, they came up with the concept of shared parking. Their app and their website allowed drivers to find, reserve, and pay for parking seamlessly whenever and wherever they were needed, either in advance or on the go. Now, we have an exciting show for you today because Baker's going to take us through the evolution of what started out as a sharing economy company that has evolved now into a tech and data analytics company. And I tell you, it's the most exciting pivot I've heard about in a very, very long time. Before we talk to Baker, I want to tell you about a company that's literally changing how you conduct social media marketing, Lumen 5. Now, we all know over the next 3 years, 50% of everything you're going to see on social media will be video. These guys helped me turn my written blog into a video blog, and it's having impact. My one video on how Black Panther can help small businesses got almost 2,000 views, and I got all of that impact plus 200 likes on my page for free. Mike, how does it work?
Simply by posting video content, you could get 10 times more likes, shares, and engagements on platforms like Facebook. A new video creation platform called Lumen 5 makes it extremely easy to create videos in minutes. The system allows you to turn blog posts into videos through a drag-and-drop interface along with automation powered by AI. Sign up for a free account today on lumen5.com and create unlimited videos for free.
Guys, Lumen 5 gives you the benefit of a Hollywood studio for free. Check them out at lumen5.com. Now, let's get back to Baker. Baker, thank you and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
Before we jump in, please tell me a little about you and what inspired you to launch this company.
Well, since a very long time, like many years ago, I've always wanted to have my own startup, as well as I have this passion to tinker with the electronics and toys and whatnot. So one day I wanted to test if I could, try to detect a car using an Arduino. And it was me and my roommate at the time, and we found ourselves to be very successful doing so. And we just put that idea to bed. We didn't really think of it as a business or anything like that at the end. One day, one of my family members looked at it and they're like, "What is this?" And I explained it to them. And they're like, this could be a great business. Why don't you pursue it further?" And we did, after that, we just went 100% after, behind it. And we realized, being students at the time, we weren't able to take this idea further because manufacturing is really, really expensive, especially if you don't have the proper funding. And that's where OpenSpot started, with the shared economy idea.
So you first started with that Arduino technology, kind of a small motherboard mini processor that could detect whether or not someone was in a parking spot, a car was parked in a parking spot. So that was your original concept, but because of...
That was indeed the original concept, yep.
But lack of funds led you to rethink the business model originally to leverage the sharing economy, like Airbnb.
So one thing we realized was the best business, the best start for a business is to start in the path of a software. You want to minimize your production costs as much as possible, and it can get lower than building a software. Once hardware is involved, the costs increase drastically. So we wanted to start with a software-based business and use the funds that come from that into building the software.
So the software gave you a chance to build something one time and leverage it over a large community and hopefully generate some cash flow that you could reinvest.
And that's exactly what happened. We were surprised, like we were way ahead of schedule in terms of the funds we were getting using the app. We attracted a lot of investors. It put us on the map. People were approaching us saying, hey, we want to invest into this. How can we do it? And so on. And sooner than later, you know, like we went from the shared economy right into what we originally wanted to do.
How did that first sharing economy business model work? Who did you have to approach? And who were those kind of target people you went after to find parking spaces?
Oh, this was a very beautiful process. So the shared economy is a beautiful thing. One thing we noticed at the beginning is that not everyone was ready for it, in the sense we had a lot of pushback from startups. I'm just going to dial it back and actually talk about the shared economy and what OpenSpot was doing with it. Basically, if you're a homeowner or home resident, you can download the app and basically rent out your spot, your parking spot, whenever you're not using it. So let's say during your work hours, that spot is vacant for approximately 8 to 12 hours. That is money that can be generated to offset your gas money or your insurance or so on. And any driver on the other side would be able to rent out that spot for a lot cheaper than they would usually have to. It also gave them the option to know that because you know that a spot is vacant, the drivers would know that, you know, that spot will always be available for them.
And so if I am a condo owner or even a residential homeowner, I could reach out to your app, register my parking spot as a place where I could generate some revenue by making it available, and then drivers would find that spot using your app and pay me whenever they parked. Was that revenue generated by the hour, or what was your model when you built out that first phase of the business?
So we did leave it up to the owners to decide. It could be either monthly or hourly. In the sense that some people, for example, like if you're living next to a school or a university, a student can come and rent that from you on a monthly basis and so on.
Now, this sounds pretty exciting because certainly in urban areas where it's really difficult to find parking spaces, you solved a terrific problem that many people have, and that's knowing where the spots are instead of driving around. It sounds like everybody would like this if you live in an urban community. Did you run into any sort of opposition?
We did, actually. So it's the same problems that Airbnb has went through, and I bet every other shared economy business had to go through, which basically you had the pushback from stratas or maybe neighbors or other homeowners because it conflicts with the subletting laws, and it really varies. Some stratas do allow it, others don't. So if any one of your listeners do want to have a startup that is utilizing the shared economy, they need to look heavily into that. Know the laws, know what you're allowed and not allowed to do. It really helps to know it beforehand.
Now, Airbnb, as you mentioned, ran into these similar problems, but they marched right into places like New York and other major cities that had forbidden them to operate based on the statutes that were on the book, but they went in anyway. Uber, same sort of situation where they were not technically allowed to operate a ride-sharing service, but they did. What caused you to kind of pump the brakes when facing the same sort of opposition?
Well, we didn't pump the brakes because of that specific issue. We were still going through it with it, and we knew that the shared economy was still a fresh and a new model that not everyone was accustomed to. And we would still be able to carve ourselves a nice chunk and have a place, you know, for people to know that we're there, they can use us. And laws would change eventually, right, to accept the model. We're not hurting anyone with it. It's just it didn't fit with some people. But we did, like I mentioned, find the funds we needed to go into the sensor business that allowed us to push more into that and lower the time and effort we're putting into the shared economy model.
Right, right. So I just want to dig a little bit more into your sharing economy model. You had mentioned in the conversation your experience when trying to find more parking spots that you looked at places like Craigslist, for example, as a potential source of parking spots because of the people that placed those on that platform looking for potential customers. How did that play out for you versus, say, some of the larger players like Uber or Airbnb that looked at that as a potential customer or asset base for their sharing economy models?
So I'll just put it this way. Airbnb ruined it for all of us. what they were the ones who first applied this method. In one of the books that was written about their story called the Airbnb story, funny enough. What they did was they went on Craigslist. They created a bot that went through every single person on Craigslist who's trying to rent out a home or a room and so on. And what they did was they contacted them via email telling them, hey, your chances of getting someone to rent out the place doubles if you use our service because, you know, you're available on two different locations. And all you have to do is just click on the link and everything will be loaded on the other side. That was great for them because back in the day, Craigslist did not have anything to stop that. But now they have a new method which stops us from using bots on their service. That basically made us do it manually. We're located in Vancouver, so we went through every single person who's living in Vancouver that's trying to rent out their spot. It's a good way to know. So it's like OpenSpot is a double-sided market. One side is the homeowners and the residents. On the other side is the drivers. So we needed to find where are those home residents? Where are they talking? How are they renting out the spots if they are doing it? How can we find them and talk to them? And that was one way because they were heavily present on Craigslist renting out their parking spots. It allowed us to populate most of the app using that way.
And see, that to me is when looking at the sharing economy model, the chicken and egg problem is the one you ultimately have to solve in order to make the model financially viable for you. And so using Craigslist is a great spot where you have all of those types of individuals who are selling that service in one place. And it was interesting, as you said, that, you know, Airbnb ruined it for everybody else because it would have made it easy if you had used bots to get the spots on your platform at the cheapest possible cost if you could have used those bots.
In their case, they basically did a global scale invasion, I would call it, because they contacted everyone everywhere in the world that is on Craigslist, because Craigslist was already global at the time. So they took advantage of that, and they didn't have to pay much in terms of advertising.
Right. And that's exactly where I was going, that many of the sharing economy models fall apart due to the acquisition cost, the customer acquisition cost, or the participant acquisition cost, that many times will require so much money that it will stall the growth of those particular businesses. And Airbnb was fortunate to fly through that opportunity, but left the closed door for many others like yourself who were attempting to tap into that resource as well. How much did that impact your business model? And did you turn to other sources to try to find parking spots in Vancouver?
Absolutely. We went door to door. We went distributing flyers at the beginning. We did go on other websites, like Kijiji and all others, to try to find people just like Craigslist, you know, posting their parking spots and whatnot. And that's just one door. Craigslist is one door. There's a lot others that, you know, any shared economy business can take advantage of. As a matter of fact, any business can take advantage of. And it's also a good way to validate the business, right? You have a hypothesis, and basically you're thinking, is it correct? Is my value proposition and is my customer segment correct? Do they fit with each other? Do I have a product market fit? And that's how you validate it, using these services for as low of a customer acquisition cost as possible.
Right. And that to me, and what excites me, and that's what gets my guerrillapreneur juices really going, is to have that sort of a view of using platforms to reduce your costs to prove out that minimum viable product. Where did you end up? What, at the peak of that model, how many spaces were you managing on behalf of your homeowners and others that had on the platform, and how many drivers were utilizing those spaces?
So I would say within 3 months, we had around 400 spots and around 10,000 drivers.
Wow.
I would say what really got us going was the media attention we got. It was a new idea. It was something that people, it's a pain to try to find a parking spot. I bet every driver has went through that at least once in their lifetime, you know, thinking, how the hell am I going to get the next spot? And it was in a way, OpenSpot was a solution to that problem that people really wanted. So it gave us a good media attention that allowed us to get the drivers. But on the other market segment, on the homeowners, it was places like Craigslist and Kijiji and going out and talking to people, flyers. And keep in mind, talking to people was a great way, like knocking on doors was a great way to know the psyche and the mentality of the homeowners and drivers. What are their concerns? How can we minimize them? So every time we talk to a homeowner, go to the next one, we already know what problems they or concerns they would have with this service, and we already have assurances to put them at ease and make them more accepting of the idea and more willing to share their spot.
When you got to that tipping point where you knew the business model was working, you mentioned that venture capital started knocking at the door. What do you think they saw in your business at that time when they initially started offering cash to you?
Potential. That would be
a
great potential.
They were saying Airbnb of parking, right? That's what they
yeah,
said.
That was the catchphrase, and you know, it was the fear of missing out on such an opportunity that really brought them in, and we're very glad that they did. And I'll be honest with you, they've been very supportive of our like, you know, the path we've been taking. What I would say what really brought a lot of people on board was the fact that we knew a lot about our customers. We knew what homeowners wanted. We knew what the drivers wanted. We already talked to a lot of them. And that's where we got to the conclusion that it was parking availability that was the key. Most of our drivers used our service not because of the shared economy, not because of anything, except that when they reach their destination, they know that that spot is available. And that was the key into starting the whole, like, pushing into the sensor thing and validated the sensor availability, because the sensor is just a solution to know whether a spot is occupied or vacant. And that's what allowed us to push into that, because we knew what our customers wanted. It's really amazing how you know, entrepreneurs, they feel that it's their business, so they get to decide what they want to do with it. But in OpenSpot, and our view was, and like me and my co-founder always agreed to this, was it is our business, but we're here to serve the customer. And whatever the customer wants, the customer gets.
That's beautiful. That's exactly the way it should be with every company, that the customers, your target market defines the company value proposition, and certainly how you evolve. And let's dig into that. Now, you started to pivot when you got investors that saw the ultimate vision of the technology, the sensors. Tell us a little bit more about how that changed the overall perspective and the value of the business.
So it was funny. When we were talking to investors, we were just talking about the shared economy model. We did offer glimpses about, you know, there's a potential that we can bring in a sensor afterwards, but we didn't want to scare them away. Until one investor, he saw a line in our business model which said that, you know, we were planning to build a sensor eventually. And he pushed into that. He was like, tell me more about this. What is this? And we started to explore more into that. And then coupled with the data we had about, you know, the drivers and how they really just wanted the parking availability. So that one investor alongside a bunch of others, they pulled them together and they were, fine, go ahead with the sensors. We'll fund you. We'll fulfill any purchase orders you have. We'll help you get, you know, like a manufacturer and any support you might need into that. Show us the sensors. It did change one thing for us. So instead of having, it is still a double-sided market, but the one side where we had the homeowners, we had to switch that with municipalities. And that was a whole new avenue of you know, learning and knowledge to explore and acquire.
So with that switch, the switch from homeowners to municipality was driven because of the technology. You needed to install these sensors in the actual parking spots. Is that correct?
Yeah. You always go back to the cycle between the customer segment you have and the value proposition. In terms of the homeowners and the sensors, it wasn't that useful for them. I mean, they don't care about what data they would get out of the sensors, right? Municipalities would care more about it. So we found a better product market fit with the municipalities because they do care about you know, who uses their parking spot, how often is it being used, how much is each spot is, you know, how long does a car stay in each spot, and so on. So they care about that information, which they never had access to before. There was a much better product market fit as, in terms of the sensors.
So with the municipalities, having access to the aggregate data, knowing the percent of time a car is in a spot relative to other parking spots means as much to them as fully maximizing spots in a single parking lot. Getting access to your technology and data analytics must have been a game changer for them and probably for you as well in terms of the data as a product in addition to the service of selling open spots.
Absolutely, yeah. I'll put it this way. The biggest parking lot owner in every city is the municipality. They, on average, obviously depending on the size of the municipality, but on average they would have around 10,000 spots. So they have the spots. We need to put as many sensors as we can. You know, we go back to the chicken and the egg thing. So in order for us to acquire more drivers, we need to have more sensors installed. So municipalities was the logical market segment to target. So we started to explore into that. You know, this was the thesis we had, is that if we go and approach municipalities offering the data they need and show how useful and insightful it will be for them, then they would acquire as many sensors as they could. And that was exactly what happened. It was just a matter of figuring out what data was more crucial to them and what was the initial process. So how did they do their information acquiring on the spot and how it is being used? And you won't believe this. Most municipalities, what they do is they send a bunch of people to go and count in each parking lot how many cars are being used once or twice a year. So that data is outdated just the next day, in a sense. What we came in and what we offered was the ability for them to have that data live. And can be, you know, used to do predictions of for the future.
Oh, man, that's so exciting. They come in and do a one-time spot survey a year, and they are using that data to do city planning. You show up and have sensors that are not only giving them real-time data, but it can have them analyze the effect on parking from events and other large conferences that may take place, changes that may have occurred through buildup of apartments or residential communities. All of that data now changes real time how they think about the future of their city and their municipalities. That's exciting data.
Mark, can I use that in my next pitch? Can I quote you on this? That was so well put. It's amazing. Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what happened. And not only that, so we could do comparisons on historical data. So, like, you know, how was it? How is it this Monday as opposed to last Monday, and so on. And it gave them, like, if they see a spike, they realize that something did happen over here. There was an event and so on that maybe they did not know about before. It really changed the game for them. On our, like, dashboard, we just started with a heat map showing them, you know, how many, in parking lot A, it's like glowing really red because people, you know, as soon as the spot is vacant, there's someone taking it over, like, shortly after. And that's an indicator that they need to build more parking lots there as opposed to a parking lot where, you know, it's generally yellow or green, which means that, you know, like, if a spot is vacant, it stays vacant for quite a bit of time before someone else takes it, which means there's not much need for, you know, building extra infrastructure. It's a better way of optimizing and helping them optimize the city better.
That is incredible, because you're absolutely right. With that approach, they're building in the right spot, and they're also optimizing the current parking infrastructure. So with your current approach, are your sensors now tightly linked with the app so that you're able to provide even more data to cities and municipalities about the car or about the individuals who drive?
As of now, we're not doing any of that yet. We still have to do tests and see. It's still a privacy issue at the end of the day on how much data can you provide and how much data the drivers are willing to, you know, give up. So it's still a matter of research for us. We do want to know what is the driver's comfortable, like, you know, just saying this is the plate number. But in sense of the... Well, we do want to offer the feature of the ability to book in advance. And that would make us need a lot more information from the driver to do that. So it's a matter of, you know, privacy or convenience. And we do need to do, on open spot side, do more research to know what is a good balance.
Right, right. I mean, that's a discussion that's going on in a lot of different arenas, including with Facebook, as we all probably know, that balance of what's allowable and what's comfortable for the consumer to share in order to get the benefits of these platforms and these technologies. I really envy where you are, because what you are opening up to cities and municipalities is real, genuine planning based on data that's real time. And to me, that is fascinating. And we'll put you in the realm of all of these other great companies that were ahead of you in terms of how you can change the online and offline world. Very exciting stuff.
Thank you so much. Your words are too kind, to be honest.
Well, you mentioned that you have a co-founder. And one of the things that we typically try to encourage when we have these podcasts is for people to share what's the benefit of having someone else with you in this journey. Has it been a real benefit to have someone other than yourself walk this journey with you?
Yeah, absolutely. Like my co-founder, Thamer Matar, has been a very good friend for a very long time. And it's always good to have someone whom you can trust with you in this journey. For me, like as we started Open Spot, I went into health issues. I started to, you know, getting anxiety and panic attacks and so on. due to the illness. And if it wasn't for, you know, my co-founder being with me, because you can never predict these things when they happen. And having a co-founder along the way with me really eased the pressure, allowed me to, take the time to feel better and get well while he took responsibility for a lot of things and allowed us to succeed and be where we are today. Because I can guarantee that, you know, at least we wouldn't be having this conversation if it wasn't for me having a co-founder.
Yeah, I can testify to that. My co-founder and I, we were and still are so close that there were times where people were like, "Are you two guys? Are you brothers?" And we look nothing alike, by the way, but we could finish each other's sentences. And having someone like that that shares your passion for the customer and for the value proposition, that's also there in that journey, just gave you the support that when days didn't go well, you could still keep pushing forward because you knew you were on the right track. So I can certainly testify to that.
Two minds work better than one. When we face a problem, we always say between the two of us, there's nothing we can't solve. And that is true to some extent, but it is really helpful to have someone whom you can, you know, bounce ideas off and think about the path to the future, and because you can't always be right, and that's like all humans do, make mistakes or they make assumptions that they don't realize might be wrong in the future. Having a co-founder and someone to rely on and to bounce ideas off of is very, very helpful.
Right, absolutely. Can you give some advice to the entrepreneurs who are listening to this podcast on what it takes to get a business like yours off the ground?
Oh, that's a big one. What I would say is give it all you got, in the sense that put a lot of effort and time into it, and make sure you validate the idea before you invest too much money into it. Validate. Make sure you have a product market fit. That is the key. If you have the product market fit, money will follow immediately after.
Thank you. That is very, very, very sound advice. Where can my audience find out more about Open Spot Parking and the future that you're building for us?
Openspot.ca. You guys can check it out. We do have a Facebook page as well, Open Spot Parking. We do post any updates about what's going on with Open Spot over there. We're actually on the brink of a merger, and we're going to be public on the TSX market, hopefully in the near future, and we can be found over there as well.
Wow! You guys heard it here first. These guys are going to be big. So we are so excited that you are leading the charge to change how we think about our communities. As I've told you in the past, I think Open Spot is going to be one of those companies that we look at from 10 years from now, and we're going to say that was the reason why our communities and our municipalities became more efficient, this technology. So I'm excited that we got a chance to spend a little bit of time with you understanding how you started and you had to pivot and pivot again in order to stay in alignment with your value proposition and those target customer segments. We absolutely appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Mark, and thank you so much for your kind words. And I just want to put one last note on pivoting. Pivoting is a great thing for a business. It's always helpful to know what your customer wants. And if you're pivoting for your customer, that is the right move always.
Absolutely. Baker, this has been an exciting episode, and we want to stay in contact with you and follow your journey and let the audience know that, like you said, if you put your all into it and stay true to the customer, money will follow shortly, you know, after that. So we're going to relay that message to all the new entrepreneurs, and we're going to continue to follow your journey.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
That was Baker Al-Naqib, co-founder of Open Spot Parking out of British Columbia, Canada. These guys are doing some exciting things and shaking up the spot occupancy market. Keep an eye on them. I expect Baker one day to be sitting on the stage next to the titans of the technology industry. I also want to thank Helena Misi for providing her song, Now I See, for today's show. We're going to play that song in its entirety right now.
Strong, it burns my skin. Found myself in Spain. Other summers end. Cares are gone, eyes are closing. While I'm drifting off and fall asleep, then a voice in my head echoed and said, go with the flow. And then you see what I see, a sweet world ahead. Good times will not end. Follow your dreams and you'll get what you need. Now I see my future so bright and free. Make my own destiny, I live my life for me. Now I see your future so bright and free. You make your own destiny. I open my eyes, I see the light. Fell in love with life. Toes in the sand, lit by clear blue skies. Just surrendering, reliving the dream I had. A voice in my head echoed and said, go with the flow, and then you see what I see, a sweet world ahead. Good times will not end. Follow your dreams and you'll get what you need. Now I see my future so bright and free. Make my own destiny, I live my life for me. Now I see your future so bright and free. Make your own destiny. The sky is yours, it's limitless. Break all the rules, leave your dreams instead.
That was Helena Misi and her song, Now I See. Clairvoyance. Every guerrillapreneur can appreciate that. Find Helena and her music on Twitter at Helena Misi, HELLENAMICY, on Facebook at Just Helena, or at her website at HelenaOfficial.com or at Helena.bandcamp.com. Thanks, Helena. I owe you another pint. Guerrillapreneurs, remember to support the show. Go to patreon.com/guerrillapreneur and donate. If you can't donate money, please go to iTunes or Podomatic and subscribe. Like the show. Love the show. Leave your comments and share the show and share the love. Guerrillapreneurs, Scott Sullivan said it best in episode 7. Be a mace. Sharpen those spikes. And remember, if you're not breaking something, your company might be the next thing that gets broken.
Thank you for listening to the Guerrillapreneur, the Art of Waging Small Business Warfare podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, You may also enjoy the book Guerrillapreneur, Small Business Strategy for Davids Wanting to Defeat Goliaths, available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and iTunes. Follow Mark Peterson on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Guerrillapreneur. Now I want to close with a quote from the great Chinese military strategist Sun Tzu. Victorious warriors win first and then go to war, while defeated warriors go to war first, then seek to win. Keep fighting, guerrillapreneurs!